fighting for your rights. My favorite line. Unlike Susan, I did read comic books. Loved them. For about 3 or 4 years, I bought every single issue of the X-Men and Spider-Man. Two superhero comics that have something in common. Each of them feels very out of place. So often a theme in the comic book world, the hero who is out of place, who feels outcast. I think it's one of the drawing powers of comics, which are as successful and more titles written and drawn now than probably ever before. Some of you must walk by that comic book store on the corner. Title after title and box after box. I would have gone into that store. I would have even been back there playing Dungeons and Dragons. Such fantasy life, I think, invites us into a mythic realm. It makes me wonder what a festival day in the old Roman Empire might have been like when I see the scenes from Comic-Con. All these different people dressed up as their favorite characters, as their favorite superheroes, taking on that identity, imagining themselves into it. It's particularly suited, it seems to me, for the young, and it must be said, particularly, mostly written for the masculine side. There's a lot of punching, in comic books. And there's a clear sense of good and bad. So often, it's an invading force from some other dimension or, you know, aliens, and they've all got scaly skin, and that's great because then you don't have to worry about who the bad guys are, which is so hard here in the world we actually live in, where everything is not so clear most of the time. That said, comics show a remarkable amount of nuance, and they are often remarkably edgy in bringing current moral and social issues to bear. Moral complexity is revealed. Good guys go bad, and bad guys go good quite regularly. Now, that was less so back in the old days, as I understand it. Pretty much before Spider-Man in the 60s, most superheroes were fairly stiff. They were pretty much super good all the time. The stories read, if you look at some of the old issues, almost like teaching tools, and certainly for a character like Wonder Woman, who is created during World War II when the U.S. is battling the Nazis, it is a teaching tool to show what is right and good and what is not. The good guys are almost always grown-ups, the younger characters, sidekicks. And into that old world of just male superheroes, kind of a gung-ho, strength, power, punching, stepped Wonder Woman, who, although she is very skillful in combat, always tries to choose the nonviolent option. In her earliest manifestations, she would use her lasso of truth, she would use her empathy, she would deflect those bullets, but she would never choose violence herself. Wonder Woman, as you heard, conceived by William Moulton Marston, who incidentally invented the technology that allowed the development of the polygraph, making the lasso of truth related to his vision of what would be necessary in order for a better world to be built. People needed to tell the truth. He came up with the idea of having a superhero that would use nonviolent means, but it was his wife, Elizabeth, who suggested that she be a woman. And William was on board immediately. There were strong women in his life, two in fact, and I'll leave the details of their polyamorous relationship to your Wikipedia reading. But Wonder Woman was in fact an amalgamation of Marston's wife Elizabeth and his mistress, then other wife, Olive Byrne, whose children Marston and his wife adopted so that they would be treated as his legal heirs. So he wanted to have a nonviolent superhero. She said it better be a woman. He believed it from the beginning. He wrote in 1943, "Not even girls want to be girls, so long as our feminine archetypes lack force, strength, and power." So the obvious remedy was to create a feminine character with all the strength of Superman, plus all the allure of a good and beautiful woman. In his words, he wanted a distinctly feminist role model whose mission was to bring the Amazon ideals of love, peace, and sexual equality to a world torn by the hatred of men. Now, even with trying to draw girls to Wonder Woman, and they have been, I think Marston and the folks he worked for at DC knew that mostly boys read comic books, and so in the earliest era of Wonder Woman, quite interestingly, his strategy for getting the boys to pay attention and respect feminine characteristics of nurturance and love and truth-telling was to make Wonder Woman just a little bit of a dominatrix. Some of those stories, no lie, I quote now from the website Comic Book Resources, have both male and female bondage sorority initiation rituals. Even spanking. I'm predicting next year's auction sermon already. Boys thought Marston would eat it right up, that they would see that submitting to a strong woman was actually good for them, was a positive and strengthening experience, and he believed that women needed to take charge, that if women would be the dominant gender for a time, that would be a solution for world peace. Yeah. So Wonder Woman, strong female archetype, evolves over time. The interesting thing about the mythic world of comic books is every now and then, based on changing societal circumstances, the comic book publisher will just hit the reset button and write a whole new story for the character. Oh, no, you didn't come from this island, you came from that island. No, you weren't made out of clay, you were born of a goddess and a god, and so forth. In the 60s, for example, one of the biggest changes that came over Wonder Woman, 1968, interesting, right? Interesting timing. Wonder Woman gave up her powers for a period of time, returned her costume and title to her mother in order to stay here in what was called Man's World, that's what the Amazons called it, or later Patriarch's World, even more clear, I guess. The Amazons were all shifting to some other dimension. Diana Prince, Wonder Woman's alter ego, her secret identity, had to stay here on this plane to help her wrongly convicted lover, Steve. That's the whole reason she'd come to America in the first place, was because an American pilot had landed on their woman-only island, and she was chosen to be an ambassador and to take him back. They later married, in fact. Interestingly, in this period, Diana runs a mod boutique as a business, gave up her costume, and dressed in a series of jumpsuits. Many have thought she was modeled on Emma Peel of the Avengers. And even though it thinks like, really, Wonder Woman, goddess, now she's got a little clothing store, it sort of seems like a step back on one hand, and that's the interesting thing about Wonder Woman. At every given point in history, she's both very much lifting up the good and new possibilities for women, and then there's that other aspect where you're just like, I don't know, you know, that's a lot of boob in that costume there. Foxy lady, though. Right at that time, this is the most interesting little nugget I came up with. The comic regularly dealt with feminist issues. At one point, a man named Samuel Delaney took over the scripting duties, and he was going to write a 6-issue story arc which would culminate in a battle over an abortion clinic. This is a comic book, 1968. But the irony is that Delaney was removed at the request of Gloria Steinem, who didn't know the content of the issues that Delaney was writing, which were very feminist. Instead, she was upset that Wonder Woman didn't have her traditional costume. Fascinating. Now, my Wonder Woman, comics aside, is without question the TV show. And I watched it as a kid, 11, 12, 13 years old when it was on. I watched a few episodes in preparation for this service. Wow. Like, if you're a fan of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with the Bee Gees and, you know, the Fantasy Island kind of aesthetic, you got to check out Wonder Woman. I loved it, and I love it now. But it's so bizarre. The initial, there's a scene where they're on the island. I mean, the women, on the one hand, it's like the grossest stereotype of women. The Amazons are all in their pretty little dresses. And, oh, let the games begin, you know. And they don't seem like the very smartest creatures. Deborah Winger plays Wonder Woman's sister. She comes to the state. She's like, why are the U.S. and the Nazis fighting? Wonder Woman kind of pets her. It's very hard to understand. So listen closely. Deborah Winger can't believe that Wonder Woman, a goddess, a princess on her own island, works for a man, and she does. Her alter ego is an assistant to Steve Trevor in the series. And Deborah Winger's like, "What? You work for a man? What are they like?" And Wonder Woman says, "Oh, they are gods. They are geniuses. They are fools." And in the episodes, that feminine side of her is so regularly portrayed, and it's quite beautiful. First of all, she's 2 feet taller than everybody, so she's constantly kind of coming up and putting her hand on their shoulder. And there are scenes where she'll say to one of the other soldiers at this defense thing she works at, "How are you?" "No. How are you?" And he's troubled because his daughter's been hypnotized by some rock star, and Wonder Woman has to go in there and kick some butt and solve the problem. And particularly in the later seasons of the show, the first couple were set back in the Nazi era, like in her creation, and the later two seasons, most of the episodes are set in the 70s, and so they could deal with the events contemporary to the day. And most importantly, I think, or significant at least, is that in the later episodes, she and Steve are not romantic partners. They are work partners. They are simply good friends. One reason for this might be that in the first season, it was Lyle Waggoner who played Steve Sr., and they just moved the whole story forward 32 years, assuming Wonder Woman wouldn't age at all, and they still had Lyle Waggoner on hand, so he had to play Steve's son. And if Wonder Woman and Steve Jr. had gotten romantically involved, that would have been a little creepy for everybody. And I look at the show and I think of the times. I think of the times when brave women really were pouring into new jobs and new roles, when women were stepping up to claim their power. And I see how Linda Carter, in her way, was teaching women of that day how to be strong, how to stand up for themselves in the work environment that they would find themselves in. She is forced constantly to negotiate doofy men. She will wear just the right kind of business suit that's ladylike and lovely, but also is not going to invite any kind of trouble, And I look at the show, and I remember we were watching it, women were watching it, families were watching it, men were watching it, and really, it was schooling everybody in the feminism of the day. Yes, there's tons of bikinis and shirtless men. Though Wonder Woman herself is never much sexualized there in her business garb. She's always very serious, but every now and then she spins. And then she's there in those satin tights fighting for her rights. And I'm just saying, I was 12 or 13 years old at the time. And watching them again, I think Linda Carter was my first real crush. And the epitome of powerful feminine beauty, for better and for worse, representing all the brave women of that era that were fighting for their rights. And Wonder Woman has never gone away. She's still around, strong in the comics, a feature on the Justice League, a great animated comic series where she's more powerful than ever. Batman has a thing for her. Even now, they are trying to get a series back on television and trying to make a movie. This archetype endures, Wonder Woman. And though sometimes it brings negative consequences, trying to do too much, falling short, feeling guilt, more often than not, I hear it as a real compliment. I hear women telling women in a heartfelt way, you are a Wonder Woman. You're powerful. You're beautiful. You're strong. Every woman has a Wonder Woman in her. I'm certain of that. And every man has a Wonder Woman in him, too. We all have these qualities that bind us together. It's what allows us to recognize each other, to see each other in each other. And just as Wonder Woman cultivated some masculine side, so too might men cultivate that feminine side. And we'll flip all this on its head next week when we talk about Mad Men. In every age, Wonder Woman has taught something about the lives of women, their hopes, their aspirations, and the resistance to that. And that's reality. There really isn't a superhero who's going to solve the problem of equal respect and equal rights for women. Here in the real world, that's going to take us. It took more than just a comic book archetype to convince the world to address income disparity, to address the glass ceiling in business, to address the many religious traditions where there is not equality for women in leadership, to address the right to control your own body, and to address the steady stream of violence against women. There are still, Wonder Woman aside, plenty of places on this earth where you get shot because you want girls to go to school. And that's not going to change with some superhero. That's going to change from us. There's only us here. There are amazing women in the world. I thank the God and the goddess for that. But it takes us as well, each of us, to find that power within that yearns toward love and truth. There's just us for justice. And there's a Wonder Woman in everyone. Each of us can take that spin once in a while, speak up, speak out, engage one another, learn from one another, show up at the mall and dance. And if we keep doing that, we will see the world of equality we dream of. May it be so. How about a quick song and stand or rise in body or spirit? A familiar tune, and the number is 327.